Okay, I want to talk a little bit about changes in land, in trans, in who owns the land. Basically, the trans kind of began. The changes in land tenure were very distinct at the onset of the American period, which was 1847 on. After the occupation of New Mexico by the American Army of the West, and the San Luis Valley was part of northern New Mexico. This eastern end was Taos County, and the western end was Rio Riba County. The trans setting that is distinct in the American period was the establishment of real estate speculation, and also the current mode of exploitation of the natural environment. The working landscapes of the Rio Riba at this present time have fallen into the orbit, I consider, of the political economy controlled by multinational corporations and manatee tourism. This metamorphosis did not occur overnight. You have to understand this. Long before the testing of the first atomic bomb in New Mexico desert in 1944, life in the Rio Riba was difficult for villagers who received little economic support from the state or the federal government. Not only were the schools impoverished and health services limited, after World War II in the 1960s, the Rio Riba lost a significant population because of land losses, and in Costilla County were emblematic of that. We had the largest out-migration of population in 1960, and that correlated with the fencing and the barricading of the last open lands in upland area in Costilla County, and it's, you know, it was known later on as the Taylor Ranch, and now it's owned by a private corporation from Texas. But this ejido or upland commons, which was land that was granted in 1863 by a covenant by the original landowner to use but not to own, to have usufructuary rights, rights to access resources but not to own those resources. When that was closed off in 1960, the sheep population went into a steep decline, and there was a large out-migration of individuals from Costilla County. We were already on the edge since the 1930s. And actually, since the land companies took control of the resources beginning at the beginning of the 20th century, for sure, by 1913, land was in control of the land company, and they went after all of the common lands, and the community became, instead of being subsistence, self-reliant farmers, they became laborers for the large ranchers and for the large farmers. And so that was a big change in the community as related to a challenge to these traditional land use patterns and to the traditional rights of the community. And so in the 60s, the Rio Riba erupted, and it wasn't only in New Mexico. This happened in Costilla County, and people rebelled against the enclosure of open space that was previously communal space. And there was definitely a lot of violence, and there was what they could call this contemporary range war. Things have improved now because in 2002, Costilla County, residents living in the Rio Culebra Basin have usufructuary rights reestablished to use the uplands, and so things have modified, but they have to use it at subsistence levels. It's not a perfect, but the Colorado Supreme Court acknowledged that the community needed this uplands to subsist, and that there was a that the procedure for notification, for legal notification, was irregular, and that's why we have access rights again. But again, we still have major problems in Costilla County right now. We have a handful of corporation that owns the uplands. We have a few communities, about six communities living in historic enclaves, and the majority of the land base are owned by subdivisions. Of the 75,000 square miles in Costilla County, 33% of the land has been subdivided into residential lots. Right now, there's at least 43,000 absentee landowners, which claim 50,000 parcels in 30 subdivisions. It's really difficult to live in a situation where you see land all around you, but there's no public space, no open space. And the only thing we have now is we have some access to that uplands, but a contemporary outcome of this court ruling, and it's the underbelly, and it's, as they say, the devil is in the details. And what ended up happening in Costilla County is now some subdivisions have also have access rights to that upland. So it's not just the local people, but it's people that are absentee resident landowners that now have access rights to that uplands. And that's because Colorado's private property, notions of private property are sacrosanct. And so the old communal land tenure patterns of the land grants have fallen by the wayside. And so there is not communal land. And that was what was the kind of the post-Guadalupe Hidalgo legacy and the kind of defining mode of existence in this frontier area was to have access to the uplands, because that's how people were maintaining their subsistence level and having small farm plots and living at subsistence levels. It was a hard life. I'm not trying to romanticize it and saying that it wasn't, that things were perfect. We have a photo of my ancestor, a woman. We call her the one-arm lady. She had one arm. And we were wondering, well, why did she have one arm? Was it because she had an arrow? Because she had gangrene or whatever? I mean, these communities had no doctors in them. They only had, herbs to cure themselves. They were using a lot of the traditions that they learned from the nomadic tribes and from the pueblos. They were growing the same kind of subsistence crops. They were using the same herbs. They were mixed blood mestizo communities. But as soon as the American period came in, and again, the defining moment was the railroad, because the railroad really industrialized the land and changed the landscape and changed it from a frontier uplands into a commercialized periphery of the Front Range of Colorado and the gold mines of Colorado, and also a resource for the military to subsist in this area. Without those rural communities, the miners would have not got fed. Without the rural communities of the Rio Riba, and I'm not only including Costilla and Conejos County, but in the northern New Mexico counties, the military would have not got fed. Their horses wouldn't have gotten fed. So these communities were the foundation. But once all of that coalesced and it was industrialized, then the communities became marginalized and subservient to newcomers that came in that really had no empathy for their position. And then they ended up becoming the labor force, the low-income labor force that worked on the big ranches and the big farms. And definitely by the 30s, the communities were impoverished. In the WPA, things got a little bit better. The communities were modernized. By the 60s, the war on poverty came into these little communities because the schools were atrocious and there were no improvements like roads and buildings and schools. And during the WPA is when they came in, for example, in Costilla County, and they started doing, again, more agricultural production. They did some furniture making, but again, the agricultural production. So there was a little bit of a renaissance there, but they could never recuperate the losses of land, and they were always at odds with these big absentee landowner companies. And one thing I have to tell you about that was that is emblematic of the far-reaching influence of the land companies is what happened in the southern part of Costilla County in the 1870s. The land companies that were out of Colorado were financed by Amsterdam bankers and by English capitalists. At that time, one of the big plans was to create a new city called Gisborne. And it was going to be near the contemporary border between Colorado and New Mexico. They were going to bring in 20,000 Dutch colonists. They already had recruiters that were in Holland looking for colonists to come in. The colonists were going to, the big plan was to start a glass factory. They were going to be totally self-sufficient. They were going to make their own shoes. They were going to make their own clothes. They were going to make their own beer. They weren't going to have anything to do with the little communities. The only thing that they wanted with these little villages that were there 30 years before was their water. So the big plan was to bring a canal from the Rio Culebra Basin with water and divert water to this new proposed Gisborne, which was going to be this city. And they were going to have a wide boulevard with all this landscaping. They were going to have their turnkey houses. They were going to have even a museum, a library, a modern European city. But they lacked water. And so the big plan was to take the water from the villages into Gisborne and use the community as their laborers. That fell through, because the Dutch did not want to live near Mexican communities, and that's how it fell through. And there were probably other financial reasons, but that kind of shows this rapid changes in the Rio Riba because of the way that land was looked upon in the post Guadalupe Hidalgo period. Had I told you that?
You had. I hadn't heard it in such detail, but
I don't know if you want to even use that, but
I may.
It is.
But it's always interesting. And other, I think Charlie had told me that too.
Yeah, it was really wild.
Yeah. But
maybe Charlie didn't know about the museum and the,
yeah, no.
The turnkey.
Yeah. It wasn't in such detail, just mm-hmm. the idea of 20,000 Dutch people like being implanted in was wild enough.
And then to take away the water and to create a glass manufacturing that would have ruined the whole environment.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's.
We would have had smokestacks in the San Luis Valley. This would have been Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh of the West.
Right. That's it's crazy.
Can I fill any more gaps?
That's what I'm.
I hope it doesn't sound like I'm reading this, but I think it does. I was trying not to make it sound like
I was
reading.
It sounded pretty good. Like sometimes it's not, you could tell you're reading quotes, but I don't think that didn't sound bad. And then you would come up and talk. So
okay.
It was okay.
And if you need me to fix anything up, we can do that again.
Okay. And I wanted to ask just, you know, briefly, if you could kind of describe the area so we can understand why water is so precious.